Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello and welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. My name is Peter Matthews. I'm an editor here at Firehouse. And I would like to welcome you to today's podcast, The Leader's Toolbox, a new show that we'll be doing on a monthly basis with Fire Chief Richard Gassaway. The program is meant for anybody in the fire service, from the firefighter all the way up to the chief officer. And it's a kind of a show where you can write your questions in, call in, give us some ideas. And each month, Rich will come back with some answers, some ideas, and some something for you to think about as you move ahead in the fire service. So, Rich, for those of the folks that listen to the show that don't know too much about you, can you kind of give us a little bit of a background?
Sure, Pete. Thanks for inviting me along. Thanks to Firehouse.com for the foresight to bring a leadership program like this to the podcast format. I think it's going to be a wonderful thing. I guess the thing that I want to say coming into the program is that I'm not a leadership guru, or I don't possess expertise above others or proclaim to have any special talents. What I have that I can bring to the podcast and to the audience is a wide variety of experiences coupled with an educational background. I've worked for six agencies in three different states, and I've been a fire chief now 18 years in a career that spans 28 years. And in the course of doing that, you know, have worked in all volunteer agencies, agencies with career staff, agencies with union staff, a variety of sizes, services ranging from fire only all the way to transport, paramedic, ambulance service agencies. So I've had an opportunity to dabble in many different aspects of emergency services. But where I really think the strength comes is the blessings that I have had in facilitating and teaching at over 200 regional and national conferences of fire service folks. And in those opportunities have come a chance to speak with people about their ideas, their problems, their solutions. And I've had over almost 20 years the chance to be a sponge and absorb so many different perspectives and point of views and ideas and unique solutions to problems. So in the course of having these podcast discussions, this is not my representation of my responses to people's issues, but a culmination of a wide variety of people's experiences that I can now funnel into one location. So really looking forward to that. Educationally, for those who might be interested, I'm a paramedic educated firefighter. I have a bachelor's degree I earned at West Virginia University, an MBA from the University of Dayton, and I'm all but my dissertation completed on my doctoral in leadership and organizational behavior. So the best way to summarize all that is a scholar and a practitioner both. I have the educational background that gives kind of the theory and perspective, but also the practical experience that says that, you know, it's been put to use and tried. And so that's what I have to bring, and looking forward to working with Firehouse.com and the callers, and hope we can bring some tools to the toolbox of leaders and help them be better at their job.
Okay, Rich, thank you very much. In the future, if you do have some questions, please use this email address to send them in, and we will get to them as we have time during the shows. The email address is podcasts@firehouse.com. Again, podcasts, podcasts at firehouse.com. Rich, we'll start off with one question that was received here a little while ago, just on a generic email to the website, and I'm sure it's something that you hear quite often as you do travel around to the shows and to the different fire departments in the country. I think we are having we have a great fire department, but there are a couple of people who are driving me crazy. They are the most negative people you can imagine. They find the worst in everything and the worst in everyone. They are loud and opinionated and never hesitate to bash someone else, especially the leaders of our department. I like being on the fire department, and I like what I do for my community. But lately, I am starting to wonder if it's worth it to be around these people and allowing them to ruin my attitude with their bitterness. I can't believe I'm the only one feeling this way in my department. Is there anything I can do, or is there anything that can be done with these people?
Well, I think that's a question that I've heard a lot in my travels, and we all want to serve our communities and do a good job and feel good about what we do in our communities and feel good about going to the firehouse and being with our firehouse family. And the last thing we want to do is dread that experience. And what you're describing is the kind of people that I would term as energy suckers, the people that as you're around them, they just draw you down into dark places that you really don't want to go. And sometimes it's hard to control. Attitudes of people are contagious, just like colds and flu. And if you're around somebody who's positive, you tend to be positive and upbeat and likable and jovial and have fun. And when you're around somebody who's negative, they can draw you down into dark areas of despair and feeling frustrated and angry. And that's kind of what the reader is describing there, is a sense of frustration with themselves for allowing them to to be drawn down by these negative folks. My first piece of advice to that person who wrote in with that would be to make sure that you stay in control of your own attitude. You own it 100%. There isn't anybody that owns it or controls it. It's yours. Doesn't belong to anyone else. And if you let someone draw you down, you're giving control of a very special part of you to someone else. And I would encourage those folks to do things like be conscientious of the fact that they're being drawn down and not allow it to happen. I use an example here, Pete, that imagine that you had a cold. And I know you have a cold because you look miserable, you sound miserable, and you're coughing and you're sneezing and you're hacking. And I see this. Would I come up, right up to you, like nose to nose, and say, "Hey, Pete, sneeze on me"? And you'd look at me and say, "What? Sneeze on me? I know you got a cold. I know you're sick. Sneeze on me. I want some of that." Of course you wouldn't do it. That's ridiculous to think that somebody would do that. Well, if you are around people who are negative and you're getting right up to them and they're spewing out their germs of negativity and you're letting them do it, you're breathing that air, you're in that space, you're allowing it to happen, then don't be surprised when you catch the cold. Don't be surprised when you get sick. Don't be surprised when you find yourself being negative as a result of being that close to them. Well, what can you do? Well, I can either, help him get well or distance myself from the problem. In other words, quarantine that person, or at least myself, away from them to say, I know that if I get up close to them, I'm going to catch their cold. This is common, when you have somebody sick in your family, you try to not get too close to them, or at least, wash your hands after you've been around them. And the same thing with dealing with somebody who has a sick attitude or a disposition, is you take certain precautions to protect yourself from getting sick. And if it happens, some of the responsibility is ours because we let it happen. And then if you accidentally get sick, a bad disposition, what do you do about it? Well, you take certain steps to try to get well again. If it's the flu, it's, chicken soup and bed rest. And, if it's a bad attitude, it's, the chicken soup might be expose myself to some positive people or start to make a list of what I think is of the good things about being on the department and the things that I like. And, You know, the medication that you take when you have a cold might be Sudafed. When you have a sick attitude, your medication might be to read a biography about somebody who's done wonderful things, you know, and as an uplifting, motivating person, like perhaps Norman Vincent Peale's book on the power of positive thinking. You know, you can't, at least for me, I can't read that book, and I've got it and read it so many times that I can't read that without coming away charged and energized and saying, gosh, you know, the guy's right, anything is possible. So that's kind of like the medication that gets you back on track. As far as actually dealing with the folks who have those dispositions, I'd say the first thing is to, instead of assuming, well, you know, he's just he or she or just crotchety because of this or because of that, I think I'd ask him. And I wouldn't ask him in an audience, because sometimes these folks just like to hear themselves pontificate and like to stir up the bigger group. There's something there that gives them some pleasure with doing that. I think I might get them one-on-one when that opportunity arises, either make it happen or just happen to run into them casually, maybe in the station one day when it's just you and them, and say, you know, my observation is that there are things happening here that you don't like or that you're frustrated with, and I'd like to understand why. And actually get the person to open up and start talking about how they're feeling. And without making this sound like a Dr. Phil segment, a lot of times people are feeling things that we don't even know existed. Well, you know, 6 months ago this happened and that really set me off. Well, geez, I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that happened. Well, it did. And it really made me angry. Oh, well, how can we fix it? Well, I don't know how we can fix it. Well, let's think about it. It makes me sad to think that you're so angry all the time, and it really isn't enjoyable to be around you when you are acting that way. Let me tell you how it makes me feel. You know, it makes me feel like I don't want to be here. Is that what you're going for? Chances are they're going to say, no, that's not what I'm trying to achieve. So what I'm saying is you get them one-on-one, and you kind of talk them down off the ledge and say, you know, what is it that's got you so sharp and so bitter and so disgruntled? Well, nobody listens to me. Well, give me some examples, and you know, I'll listen. What are some of your ideas? Well, I think we should be doing this or doing that. And sometimes, Pete, you know, what we do is we like to listen to people that we like. We like to listen to people who share our point of view. And when people don't share our point of view, we don't like to listen to that. And we say they're disgruntled and they're bitter and they're just negative. Well, no, maybe they just have a different point of view. Does that make them wrong and make us right? Because our point of view is ours, so it must be right, and theirs is theirs, and it must be wrong because it isn't the same as ours. No, it doesn't. Open up our mind a little bit and listen to them and hear what they have to say. You know, Stephen Covey in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, in one of those habits, he says, seek first to understand and then to be understood. And if you take that principle to heart, it's reaching out to those folks and saying, I really want to understand how you're feeling and how you're affected by the things that are happening in this organization. And when you reach out, chances are they're going to say, you know, this is the first time anybody ever asked me how I really felt about things. And they may be skeptical. They may not know how to react to that. And they have to sense that you're genuine and that you really do care. But when you seek to understand first, instead of trying to get them to understand your point of view first, you get a new perspective. You kind of get one of those aha moments. Wow, I didn't quite realize that you know, this person had these things happen to them, or that they see the world this way. And now that I understand, sort of walked a small distance in their shoes, I can better relate to how they're feeling. I'm not saying that I condone their behavior as far as how it affects me and affects my attitude and affects the morale of my station, but I do better understand how they feel. And from that, when you get that foundation relationship going, then you can start to better deal with their problems and get them into the fold of getting their issues addressed. A lot of times those folks who are disgruntled have put baggage, there's just baggage that's building up, you know, one thing and then another thing and another thing, and because they appear to be bitter and disgruntled, when they complain about it, everybody says, that's just old crotchety Joe complaining, just ignore him. Well, and the more you ignore him, the more crotchety he gets, because what he's saying, maybe in not the most articulate way, is, I have ideas. I have, you know, I've been here, you know, let's assume it's somebody who's been there a long time. It isn't always, but I've been here a long time. I have a lot of experiences, and you folks aren't listening to me. That's frustrating me. And maybe it's just coming off as them being angry and bitter. But maybe what they're saying in that not-so-articulate way is, I have some things to contribute here. Would somebody just give me the, you know, peace of mind of listening to me?
It could almost be the transition from the joker, you know, the firefighter who's been around the firehouse for 20 years to, you know, okay, well, now I want to give you the serious side of what I've learned over the last 20 years in the firehouse, and people may not even take him seriously or something to that extent, where they're just, you know, he's always been the joker, and, you know, why should we take any of his, quote, knowledge and take it to heart and try and use it when he's always, you know, crack jokes or something like that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny how we read people and we put labels on them. You know, somebody's crotchety, somebody's the joker. You know, and all departments have these. You know, a chief friend that I was talking with had once said, you know, it's just a different circus, but all the clowns are the same. You know, and so we all have the same characters in our department, good and bad. We all have them. That's the one thing I find so unique as I travel around, is people think their problems are unique. You know, we have this unique situation I'd like to talk to you about. Okay, tell me about it. And they start to tell me about it, and I just smile. They say, what are you smiling about? You think this is funny? I said, no, your situation just isn't as unique as you think that it is. It's much more broader than what you think. But it may be unique for you, so... you know, I'm not downplaying it, but a lot of folks have those players. And, you know, take the joker as an example. You know, you label him. Well, he's just the joker. You know, don't take him serious. And we dismiss the message those people bring to the table. And a lot of times they have some really good ideas, but we don't give them the benefit of the doubt because we've already got a label on them. You know, it's kind of like the rookie. You know, or recruit, as I would prefer those folks be called, the newer member of the fire department. You say, well, what can you bring to the table? You're new here. Well, yeah, they might be new, but they still have an entire life's worth of experience of doing something, even if it was just growing up and the things they learned in high school, or, you know, learned in their first job, or, you know, they bring something to the table. They can contribute. They know, you know, they have ideas that they can bring. So don't dismiss anyone from bringing anything to the table. And one thing that I did want to share about those negative folks, because, you know, the person who wrote in made this all sound like it's a bad thing. It isn't always a bad thing. And let me tell you one way that I've used this to my advantage a number of times throughout my career. Like many leaders in the fire service, I am an eternally optimistic person. When somebody comes to me with an idea, my mind starts racing of all the ways this can work. You know, oh, yeah, we could do this and do this and do this, you know. And in my mind, I'm building ideas and concepts and start doodling on paper. And it just runs and grows exponentially. But one of my personal faults is I have a hard time identifying the downsides, the bad things that can happen. Well, if you do this, did you think about that? So in my optimism, my mind is wired to be this optimistic person. I have a hard time seeing the negative side, just like negative people maybe have a hard time seeing the positive side. So where these negative folks who are wired differently than I am have been an asset to me is when I have an idea, I take that idea and run it past them and let them tell me all the ways it won't work. And then I get a notepad, and maybe I don't do it right there while I'm with them. Maybe I'm just listening attentively. But when I'm done, I get a notepad, and I start writing down all these things that they thought about of why it won't work. And I'm continually amazed to think, you know what? I would have never thought of those things on my own. because I'm not wired to think of all the what ifs and the negative and the downsides. I mean, I can do some of it, but not to the extent that they have. They have such talent at bringing this stuff to the surface. And it's, I'm sure you're going to have some readers out there that are just giggling, saying, yep, got that person, you know, bring something positive up in a meeting, and there's going to be one or two folks that can just find the negative in it, the, you know, throw the wet blanket over it. So these people can be an asset. They have been for me by helping me be a more rounded leader and helping me see from their perspective the downside of new ideas and new ways of doing things, and if you change this, it'll affect that. And so in that regard, I have them to thank, because I think they've made me be a more rounded thinker when it comes to bringing something new into the organization.
And what about for the new members? You touched on it a little bit. You know, as a new member coming into the fire station, okay, you know, they may have grown up in that neighborhood, or they may have been a tradesman or something like that, where you can, you know, pick up their skills. But what about for the new firefighter assigned to the firehouse? Everybody's going to come up and kind of say something a little bit different to them, whether it be stay away from that one, you know, that one over there knows everything, this guy is the best, this person over here knows how to do this. And I would have to assume that after a couple of months, you know, you do learn who to go to for one thing and who to go to for the other thing. But if somebody does bring that negative attitude to you as a new person, you know, this is the worst station, this is the worst place to be, 20 and out, that's all I'm here for, something like that, what would you recommend to that new guy or girl that just got into the department?
They
could be scared, or they're just so overwhelmed by everything they've just learned, and now they're put into the mix, and where do you go?
My advice there, Pete, is the same whether you're a new firefighter or you're the new fire chief coming into an organization. So this piece of advice segues from the very newest to the newest chief, and that is when you come into an organization, instead of trying to impress folks with what you know, be it the new firefighter or the new chief, pause and be a sponge and take in what other folks have to tell you and listen to everyone's perspective. And if folks aren't offering their perspective, ask, what are your thoughts on this? What are your perspective on this? And instead of trying to impress them with how much we know or how much we can offer, or trying overzealously to get their attention and say, oh, you know, this guy's a good, smart person, and it just be a sponge and take in what folks have to say. Now, realize, just like a sponge can only hold so much water, and then you're going to wring some of it out. And the same when you make yourself a sponge to take in all these things that all these folks have to say, at some point you have to wring some of that out. And what I mean by that is, at some point you have to sift through and say, okay, now that I've listened to a wide variety of people with a wide variety of views and a wide variety of opinions, it's time to now form my own. And as much as when you're new in an organization, people want to try to form them for you, like your attitude, that's the last thing that you should give control of. I'll listen to what you have to say, but in the end, whether I think old Joe is, you know, crotchety and not worth being around, I'll form that opinion. You know, and maybe he is that way for you, but that doesn't mean he has to be that way for me. Maybe if I establish a relationship with him, I'll learn a lot from him, and he'll warm up to me and share in positive ways. You know, maybe I'll give him the attention that no one else is willing to give him, and then as a result, learn a great deal from him. So I'd say take in what folks have to say for a period of time. You know, you don't have to come to the organization feeling as though, you know, you got to jump right into the limelight and, you know, be the most impressive and have them think, well, geez, you know, where were we before you came along? You know, you've been so great for us. Just kind of, you know, I don't want to say lay low, because I like folks to come in, you know, gung-ho and eager, But don't form your opinions of people or even form your opinions of your department until you give it some time to look around. You know, it's kind of like if you go to a new town and you see the sign that says, "Welcome, you know, to any town, USA," it would be unfair to form your opinion about that town simply by what you see in your first 50 feet of driving into it. You got to kind of drive around and look and see and feel and stop and visit some of the attractions and, you know, and get a sense for the community of and talk to folks. And it's the same coming new into an organization. You know, don't form your opinions of people or of the organization with your first interaction with them or what someone else has told you about them. You know, if somebody says, you know, "Stay away from old Pete. You know, he's a crotchety old SOB, and, you know, and he'll just drag you down." I would personally find that a little intriguing to say, "Geez, I wonder what it is about him that makes them say that." And then, you know, kind of go out on my own to try to figure out why is that? I might even ask them who told me that. "Why do you think he is that way?" "Oh, I don't know." "Well, why don't you know? Haven't you ever asked him?" "Well, I'm not going to ask him. You ask him." Well, somebody should ask him why he's, you know, old and, or not old, but why he's, you know, he's crotchety and angry. And I don't want to make this sound like it's all about the senior folks. You know, sometimes you have new crotchety people too. You know, it's not an age thing. It's more of a disposition, you know, a disposition thing. And take it all in and then form your own opinions. Don't let people form your opinions for you. That's like giving them control of your attitude, and it's just, it's not a healthy thing to do. I mean, we're, you know, God gave everybody their own brains so they could think for themselves, and don't let people think for you. So, yeah, that'd be my advice there.
Okay, all right. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back to you with the Leader's Toolbox.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox with Fire Chief Rich Gassaway. This is Peter Matthews again. I'm editor here at firehouse.com. If you do have any questions, please feel free to email them in to us, and we will get to them in the future shows. The email address is podcasts, that's podcasts, at firehouse.com. Chief, I have a second question for you, and it's that of a newly elected chief in the department. I am a newly elected fire chief in my department, and I want to do a good job, which I guess that's a good thing. That's a good start, good mission.
Yeah, it is.
Our last chief held the position for almost 20 years. He wasn't very flexible, and he didn't seem interested in the ideas the younger members were bringing up at the meetings. This created some division between the older members and the younger, newer members. Some encouraged me to run for chief because they thought I could make some changes and move the department along. So I ran against the chief and got elected. Now the younger guys are happy to have me, but the older members feel as though I betrayed the chief by unseating him. I liked our previous chief and thought he taught me so much. In fact, I'd go as far as saying he had been a mentor that I've looked up to since I have joined. But it was time for a change, and it seems like everybody except him and a handful of his supporters could see it. What can I do to get off at the right foot and try and keep everybody in the department happy?
Well, I think that many organizations go through this after a leader of long tenure. At some point, there is a changing of the guard, and sometimes those are pleasant experiences where the leader says, "Up, my time is up, and time to go," and pass the reins, and it's smooth and seamless. And sometimes it's a little rougher around the edges when the person isn't feeling as though they're ready to, you know, pass it along. It sounds like there was an election here that might have had some contentiousness between the younger firefighters and the more senior firefighters. I want to start by picking up on something that the writer had said early on, is that he was a newly elected chief, and to talk just for a moment about being elected into the position of leadership in a fire department by the folks that you are going to be working very closely with. You know, when you get elected into a position at local government or at state or federal level, you're representing a very large mass of people. And in the process, you know, some are happy with you and some are not. And you hope that you do a good job and get reelected. In the fire department, people are more intimate day in and day out with everything that you're doing. It's much more visible, has much more impact on the people in the organization. So you're kind of always on display or always being judged. And someone had given me some advice a while back about elected fire chiefs that I thought was very poignant and stuck with me. And that is, if you're doing your job well, you're not always going to be popular. And if you're trying to be popular, you're not going to always be able to do your job well. So if you think of like the scales of justice, and on one set of the scales you have the need to be popular, and on the other set of the scales you have the desire to do a good job. Bringing balance to that need to be popular to the need to do a good job is a hard thing to do. Because as you try to choose, well, I'll be the popular chief and I'll get reelected. In the process of trying to do something to make someone happy, you'll make someone else unhappy. And then you do something to try to make that unhappy person happy. In the process, you make two other people unhappy. And then in the process of trying to make those two people happy, maybe you make four other people unhappy. And you end up chasing your tail around saying, this isn't very fun trying to be the popular person because everything I do, someone seems to not like it. And that is so true in all that we do in life, and especially in the firehouse. You know, if for you chiefs out there, you know, pause for a minute and think, when's the last time I did something that made everyone happy? You know, I heard somebody say once, you know, if you had a room full of firefighters and there were 100 of them in the room, and you said, you know, you all have done a good job, and I'm going to give each of you a $50 bonus and started doling out the cash, there'd be somebody that'd say, wait a minute, wait, I'm not happy here. You gave me a $50 bill. I wanted, you know, two 20s and a 10. Or how come his bill's new and my bill's old and wrinkly? Or how come I can't get 51s instead of a 50? So, you know, you're not going to be able to make everyone happy, even when you think you're doing something that everyone's going to like. That isn't going to happen. That's an unrealistic expectation that you place on yourself, and you'll find yourself as a chief being very unhappy if you set it to be your goal to try to have everyone like everything that you do. It just is impossible. So what's the flip side of that? What's the other side of that, you know, the scales of justice there, is doing a good job. Well, if I do a good job, it means sometimes I'm going to have to tell somebody no. Yes, it does. With that responsibility of being that chief also comes a responsibility of doing what's right. And what is right is not always popular. Oftentimes, many times, not popular to do the things that are the right thing to do. And as chiefs or leaders in the organization, we have to wake up in the morning and look in the mirror at ourselves and say, do I like the person that I see? Am I out there doing the right things? Whether they're popular or not, am I leading and doing the right things? And if I am, I can sleep well at night. I can look myself in the mirror in the morning and say, I'm doing the best job that I can. Well, if I do that, I might not get reelected. Yep, that's right. You might not get reelected. Now, there are plenty of people out there in the world who do good things and in the process don't, you know, get the reward at the end. You know, they're not always the victor, but they feel good about having done the right thing, made, you know, good sound decisions and did, you know, followed good leadership practices and did what was right for the organization and the community that they served, and in the process got unelected. And those, I think, are the better leaders than the ones who say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get reelected, and to do that, I have to keep 51% of the people happy. Well, in the process of keeping everybody happy, you're going to have an organization that potentially could run amok, because being a good leader doesn't mean having an organization that's always happy with every decision that you make. You know, in the end, you certainly want to have the majority of your organization supportive of your leadership and your style and your and understanding the decisions that you make. Maybe not liking every one of them, but at least fully understanding this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it, and addressing their questions and their concerns. And I spent a lot of time with that up front, because he talked about, he'd said two things when he was elected in his position, and he wants to try to keep everyone happy. And it sounds like as a new chief, he's coming in saying being elected is, you know, a strong component of having this job and keeping everyone happy is my goal so that I get reelected. And I would encourage this chief to focus on doing a good job and being a good communicator and making sure that people understand where he or she stands on issues and why they're making the decisions, and hope that people will rally behind and support that direction. The second thing that this particular writer is talking about is this division, or what he describes as, or had stated as, a division between our older members and our younger members. And I'm gonna take the liberty to think, or to interpret this as he means members of many years service versus members of lesser years service, instead of making it an actual physical age thing between young and old. So I'm gonna think that he means older meaning more tenured members, and younger meaning the newer folks. And what we have here is really just, this is classic to all organizations, is the longer you do something and the more you do the same thing over and over and over again, it starts to become part of your routine, part of your habit, part of your comfort, part of who you are, part of you know, your everyday expectations. You know, think of the folks who get up every day and travel to work the same route. Well, why not go somewhere, you know, why not go down this street and around the block, you know, and try something new? Well, I'm comfortable with this. This is my routine. And then there's an accident, and they have to get out of their routine, and it, you know, ruins their day to, you know, have to go down some new road that I, you know, I didn't want to go down that road. And you start to get some of this churning and turmoil, because folks don't like to change. So, you know, that's kind of where you have, you know, maybe some of the senior folks are saying, you know, we've done this way a long time, and for me it seems to work. It's my comfort. And then in comes the newer folk who say, there may be a different or a better way of doing things. And have you thought about this and thought about that? And then you start to get some of this resistance. Well, yeah, we thought about that. In fact, we tried that once in 1972. Was it 72 or 71? One of those years. We tried that, and it didn't work. Matter of fact, it failed miserably. And I'm quite sure it will today, because it did then, too. And they're not, their mind isn't really open to doing something new or different, because they are in their comfort zone. And we really, none of us really willingly or like to get out of our comfort zone. Every once in a while, we, you know, we might, on our own choosing, decide to do something new and daring, but rarely do we do it because someone, and enjoy it because someone forced us. You know, I might go down a new road to work because I want to, but when I do it because I have to, it's not nearly as fun as when doing it because I wanted to. So these folks are, you know, comfortable in their style and in their surroundings. And the new folk come in and say, here's some ideas. You know, maybe somebody joined who was on another department. Well, my other department, you know, we did this and we did that. Oh, shut up, kid. You know, you're now in our town. You're not over in that town anymore. And when you're here, you'll do it our way. And you know, when these folks who have these new perspectives and they're full of youthful energy and come to the table with some new ideas, you start to end up having this clash, you know, some lightning bolts and thunders that occur, because you have people that are not on the same page. You have one group who've got their heels dug in saying, nope, it needs to stay this way, and you got another group that's saying, no, you know, look, this is an exciting direction, and this is an exciting direction, and they don't see eye to eye. So what what do we do? How do we get those folks to find common ground? Well, first of all, we do that by not saying that one side is right and the other side is wrong. So you're the new chief come in, you don't say, you know, the senior guys, we got to go with what they're saying. Or say, the new guys, we got to go with what they're saying. Now, what this person describes is, you know, the younger folks, it sounds like maybe they forced an election, forced a change, and got this new chief into office. Well, that doesn't mean this new chief's loyalty is now only to those who elected him to office. He or she is the chief of the whole department and all the members, not just those who, you know, supported him to get him into office. So they have an obligation to chief and to lead for everyone. So I think that new chief has a great opportunity here ahead of him or herself to bring those folks together, okay? And one good way to do this, if that organization has a mission statement, is to bring folks together and get them to focus on what is our reason for being here? What is our mission? And if they don't have one, it might be a good time to talk about developing a mission statement, a short single sentence of why we exist as a fire department. And it kind of gets everybody onto a common purpose. Instead of it's me against you, let's tackle this concept of why are we even here? Why am I a member of the department? Expect a little frustration at first, because you're going to find out that you have a lot of people there for a lot of reasons, and some of them are very noble, you know, make a difference in you know, mankind and you know, save lives and property. And if you have some others, if they're willing to be honest with their feelings, have maybe lost touch with that and have long forgotten that's the real reason why they joined the fire department. So if you can find some common ground, someplace where, okay, we all agree these are two or three or four things that give us purpose, then you can start to bring them to share their ideas about how to achieve that purpose. And I think that the biggest disconnect between a person who wants change and a person who doesn't want change is to understand each other. And I'd said a little bit in the last question, you know, to seek first to understand. For that young person, I've heard a lot of young, newer firefighters say, I don't understand why they don't want to change. And I've heard the senior folks say, I don't understand why those, you know, young kids think this, you know, this needs to change and that needs to change. It's worked fine for 30 years and it'll work fine for another 30. What we have is two groups who haven't spent much time learning each other's point of view. Walk a mile in each other's shoes to say, help me understand why you think that way. And a lot of times, Pete, it has been my observation, and I've talked to a few psychologists about this too, is a person who resists change. Say, for example, we're having an all-department meeting, and I say, folks, I got this great new idea. We're all gonna take a class on learn how to hydraulics. We're gonna learn the actual mathematics of pumping a truck, you know, and a hose line is pumped at X pounds per square inch. No longer is it just estimated at, you know, little bit up, a little bit down. We're actually going to learn hydraulics. And in the back of the room is sitting a senior member and jumps up and says, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. I can't believe that you'd even bring that idea up. You know, you're where are you coming? You know, and they start lashing out at you. And you say, whoa, man, he really has some feelings about this. And I'd ask folks, what do you think he's really saying? Do you really think that he's saying that learning how to pump the truck properly is a bad thing? Or do you think what he's really saying maybe is, I'm afraid? But he's not going to actually come out in front of the entire group of all the firefighters and say, hey, everybody, I'm afraid. No. What they're going to do is they're going to lash out at you and lash out at your ideas. But maybe what they're really saying is, there's something about this change that's causing me some fear and anxiety. So if you get that person one-on-one and say, you know, in that meeting, you kind of lashed out at this idea. What are you afraid of? I mean, you know, it's just me and you. Let's have a frank discussion here. What are your concerns? Well, you know, in high school I wasn't really that good at math, and you know, that's been 20 years ago anyhow. You got these youngsters who are all for this hydraulic training because maybe they're all just fresh out of high school or fresh out of college, and you know, a number of them are probably math whizzes, and I just wasn't ever really that good at math, and I don't think I've really gotten a whole lot better over the course of time. Now you want me to take this class to learn how to do all this, and I've got to do all these math calculations, and I'm just not comfortable with that. Okay, now we understand. It isn't that they think the idea of taking the class was stupid. What really is the issue is they're afraid of losing their stature within the organization. The people are going to look down on them and say, geez, here's this 30-year guy that can't even learn hydraulics. And there's a lot at risk here. There's a lot at stake here because that person has spent a lot of time building up their reputation and respect with other folks in the department. And here, you know, with one class, they could get knocked down significantly because they don't know how to do good math. So you get this fleshed out and say, okay, I got it. I understand now. And I see your point of view. I really hadn't thought of it from that perspective. Let's figure out how to work through this. How can we work through this? I'll tell you what. I want you to help me teach. What do you mean, help you teach? I told you I'm not going to be good at this. Oh, yeah. I want you to help me teach. I'm going to give you a list of the hose lines that we have on the truck and how long they are and their diameter, and I'm going to give you this little chart, and at the end it's going to say what pressure to pump it at. I'm going to give that to you on a piece of paper, and then when we do the class, we're going to send them out to you, and you conduct the test. And you say, you know, hose line number one, what would you pump that at? It's 150 feet long, and it's an inch and a half, or inch and three-quarter. And that person says X, whatever the pressure is, 130 pounds. And you just look at your chart and see whether it's right or it's wrong. And if it's wrong, no, you know, tell them that it should be, you know, 150 instead of 130. And you can help teach by coaching them as to which the pressures are right. You'll have the answers there. I won't make you do the calculations. It's a win-win. You save your self-esteem. You save your stature in the organization. They'll respect you. They're coming. You're going to be giving them the test, so to speak. And pretty soon now, this person's out among the masses saying, yeah, this hydraulics training, this is good stuff. What turned them about? You address their fears, and in a way that was created a win-win, they're now on board, and you have an ally. You've given this person a way to work through this situation, work through this change, that they save their self-esteem and their self-respect, and they come out looking good among their peers and the new firefighters. That's a win-win. And when you have these situations where you have these, you know, butting of the heads between newer members and senior members, or over this change or that change, I would encourage folks to say, you know, where is the win-win in this? You know, if I force this class without talking to you, and as a result you quit the fire department, that's not win-win. That's win-lose. I won, everybody got hydraulics training. You lose because you had to leave the fire department. That's not the good answer. We want to find the win-win solution. We find a way where we get what we need to have, and you get what you need to have. And if you work hard enough, there is almost always a win-win solution. Now, that win-win might be I have to compromise a little bit, and you have to compromise a little bit. Like the example that I gave, the compromise that I did is I'm not going to make you do the math. I'm going to give you the calculations and have you help me teach folks by being the person who takes them through this testing station out of the truck. Ideal? Not necessarily. Ideally, you'd do the math and learn the calculations. And if you're willing to do that, maybe we'll try to teach you that part of it. But in the end, if the stumbling block is that, I'll try to find a way that gets you through the class, gets you supportive of the direction that we want to go, and as a result, you want to do it. I mean, that's the essence of leadership. That's the takeaway here. Leadership is finding a way to get folks to carry the direction of the organization, even at times when they don't necessarily want to, for various reasons. is it leadership if you get people to go in a direction that they want to go? It doesn't take a whole lot of leadership to say, hey, here's $100 bills up here on the table. Everybody come up and take what you want. You know, people will do that. They want to do that. The essence of leadership is getting folks to do things that they don't necessarily want to do, and then try to get it to do it in a way that they actually enjoy it and support it and are enthusiastic about it. And when you can do that, you've got the core of leadership in the bag.
Okay. That was an awful lot of good advice, Rich. Thank you very much. I think we'll finish off with that for today. So, Rich, thank you for joining us. Please
thanks for having
tune
me.
In again next month. And if you have any questions, suggestions, or some feedback, please let us know by email at podcasts@firehouse.com. Thank you, Rich, and we look forward to talking to everybody soon. Thanks.
Thank you.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.